Welcome to the Depth Dive. Today, we're really digging into one of the most dynamic financial landscapes globally, digital financial services, DFS, across Southeast Asia, or CN. We've pulled together insights from key sources, leaning heavily on that latest Google, Temasek, and Bain research. Now, our mission here isn't just about listing growth numbers. For you, the professional listening in, the goal is, well, strategic. We need to cut through the noise, figure out where this incredible growth is actually stabilizing, and crucially, where the capital is really flowing.
Yeah, that's the key distinction, isn't it, between just potential and realized strategy.
Yeah.
I mean, the big picture is already impressive, right? The Southeast Asian digital economy, it's on track to blow past $300 billion in GMV.
Mm.
But the DFS sector specifically, it's moved beyond just early promise. It's maturing structurally. And that shift, you know, from maybe speculation to more proven models, that's exactly what's pulling in the serious investor interest right now.
Okay, so let's talk about that foundation first. Because DFS isn't this niche thing anymore. It's central. And the infrastructure changes seem pretty profound. I mean, think about it. All 10 aggregating countries, they now have national unified QR systems. That alone is, well, an amazing feat of standardization.
It really is.
But then 8 of those markets already have cross-border QR working. That seems like the real game changer. This kind of, you know, seamless connection across borders for even tiny payments, that's got to be critical for scaling up.
Absolutely critical. And if you want to put numbers on that scaling, look at the 2025 projections for ASEAN 10. They're pretty stark. Digital payments GTV gross transaction value that's estimated to hit, wait for it, $1.412
trillion. Trillion.
Yep, trillion. And the crucial part, digital transactions are expected to be like 61% of that total. So cash is definitely getting pushed aside faster and faster. And what's interesting is how that huge payment volume becomes like a runway for the higher margin stuff. So digital lending, looking at loan book balance and digital wealth AUM, assets under management, they're both seen as major growth pillars.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about $91 billion each by 2025, estimated.
Right. So that's the opportunity then for professionals. The simple payment processing, maybe it's maturing a bit, but the real value, the focus for building businesses now, it's moving towards those more complex integrated services,
mm-hmm.
lending, wealth, maybe insurance too. Okay, so if that's where things are headed, let's follow the money. Where is the capital actually going to capture that shift?
Well, the capital allocation data paints a really clear picture. DFS is pretty much cemented its spot as the number one sector for private funding in the region. It's now pulling in somewhere between 45% and 50% of all private deal value.
45 to 50%, that's a huge increase from before. Wasn't it around 30%?
Exactly. A massive structural jump. But here's maybe the bigger headline. Where that money is going, it's concentrated. This huge pile of investment, it isn't really chasing seed stage dreams anymore. Something like 80% of the total funding value just in the last year went into late stage deals. We're talking Series C, D, E, and beyond.
Hold on, 80%. That's a huge signal, right? It basically says the early days, the sort of build it and hope phase, that's done. So for anyone deploying capital now, the strategy has to be more like buy or partner, not build from scratch. Is that it? Consolidation time?
Absolutely. That's the takeaway. Investors are de-risking. They're backing the proven winners, the ones with clear paths to actually making money and scaling up. Yeah, consolidation is definitely on the horizon. They want mature companies, established customers, regulatory boxes ticked, less appetite for early experiments.
Okay, that fits perfectly with what's actually making money right now. Because even with all this investment interest, the hard numbers show lending is still the king, revenue-wise. Digital lending revenue is projected at a massive $22 billion by 2025 for ASEAN 10.
$22 billion. And wealth is strong, too, about $9 billion.
Yeah, but that $22 billion in lending, how sustainable is that? What makes it work?
It really comes down to underwriting. That lending growth, it keeps going because it's targeting those communities often missed by the big traditional banks, right?
Yeah.
The underserved. And they can do this because they're not just relying on old credit scores. They're using smart underwriting, pulling transaction data straight from the ecosystem. They know payment histories, buying habits, maybe even movement data.
Which is exactly what these digital banks are leveraging, isn't it? They get strong growth by partnering up within ecosystems. So they get access to your in-app data payments, transport, maybe even chats for underwriting that's way more dynamic than what a traditional credit check offers.
Okay, but let me push on that a bit. If they're using ride-sharing logs or chat data for loans, doesn't that create huge regulatory risks? Privacy risk? I mean, traditional banks kind of avoided that deliberately. Is this smart underwriting or just aggressive data grabbing that's bound to cause problems? That's exactly the tightrope they're walking. Right now, that data advantage is their edge. But managing the ethics, the regulations, the potential backlash, that's going to decide who survives long term. For now, though, the efficiency gains in serving the unbanked seem to be winning out for the fastest movers. And switching gears to wealth management, the strategy there is also about efficiency and funneling customers. We're seeing multiple digital wealth platforms cross that $1 billion AUM mark, so the scale is definitely viable.
And their strategy is clever. They hook customers with appealing high-yield cash management products, like a simple way to get started, right? Get the customer's cash flowing into their system.
Exactly.
Then once that trust is there, that relationship is built, they upsell, move them into higher risk, potentially higher return investments. It's a neat funnel, starting with convenience.
And that convenience point leads us straight to how this all works operationally. Embedded finance. It's like the invisible engine driving the whole market. Embedded payments, lending, insurance, it's hit critical mass everywhere. E-commerce, food delivery, travel. It's how these platforms make money beyond just their main service. You see it really clearly with SME credit. Lenders are focused there, embedding working capital loans right where merchants and drivers need them. A delivery driver needs cash for bike repairs. A merchant needs inventory. The loan offer pops up right in the app they use daily. Super convenient, potentially lowers risk too.
Makes sense. But despite all this incredible adoption, all this convenience, there's still that big hurdle you mentioned earlier, trust. The data is a bit confusing there, isn't it? Like 42% of consumers still don't trust these digital players as much as traditional banks, and half of them use multiple e-wallets. So loyalty seems shallow. They use the tech, but they're not committed.
Right, and that trust gap becomes absolutely critical when you think about AI. The AI transformation is speeding up. Consumers seem happy using AI for, you know, simple daily stuff. But getting them to trust AI for the big financial decisions, managing wealth, assessing risk, that requires a whole different level of trust. We're heading towards what some call agentic transactions. So the AI doesn't just remind you about a bill. It uses your credentials, manages your identity, and just pays it autonomously because it knows the due date, checks the balance. It's system autonomy.
That's a massive leap. Especially at that 42% trust deficit we just talked about.
It really is. And because this region, ASEAN, leans so heavily on e-wallets and QR codes, not global card networks, the solutions for building that deep agentic trust, they have to be homegrown, tailored to the ASEAN context. We need local innovation in digital ID, secure autonomous systems. That's the only way forward.
Okay, so let's try and pull this all together as we wrap up. The DFS market in Southeast Asia, it's definitely mature now. Investment is high, but smartening up, focusing on proven profitable services like lending and wealth, that QR foundation is solid.
Yeah, the next chapter seems less about just getting people to use the tech and more about profitability, likely consolidation, and solving that really complex trust issue, especially as AI starts wanting to make bigger decisions for us.
Which brings us to a final thought for you, our listeners, to mull over. Southeast Asia leads the world in finance apps. Adoption shows amazing tech agility, right? Yet half the consumers still prefer traditional banks or want human checks for complex stuff. So here's the question. In this hyper-digital world they're building, is the ultimate edge now actually human trust, not just fancier tech?
Something to definitely keep in mind as you shape your strategies in the region.
Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive. We'll catch you next time.